go.
Okay, I'd like to call the meeting of the National Airport Authority to order at 6 o'clock on Wednesday, September 20th.
Secretary Sargent here. Director Duquette.
Here.
Vice Chairman Sandra Adams Cushing.
Here. Absent today are Chairman Rosenblum and Director Woods. I just want to remind everyone to state your name for the record if you do wish to speak. Yes. Any public input? Okay. Minutes.
Having received no comments regarding our last board meeting minutes, I move that we approve the board minutes for the month of August 2017.
Second.
All in agreement?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, motion carries. Treasurer's report.
Yeah, in view of the absence of the president, the chair, and the treasurer, I make a motion that we delay the discussion and approval of the August financial statement minutes until next month.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We need to have a discussion. Communications.
We have one letter of communications from a Stephen R. Bryson, consulting engineer, requesting an opportunity to prepare independent fee estimates for the Airport Authority. The document is on file. I don't think I need to read this.
No, has anybody reached out? Mm-hmm.
No.
Talk to him? Oh, yeah. No. Yes. Okay. Any comments?
Yes. I believe Stephen Reed works for Stantec, or he used to work
for Stantec.
Or he did or used to work for Stantec, who is a direct competitor of us, so that may be a conflict of interest if he does IFEs for the airport.
I don't see any. I don't think he no longer works there, though. So.
I think he's independent now.
Yeah, I think so, too. So.
Okay. Yeah, but I chose that.
So the
independent
yeah.
Prices,
yeah.
He's
got
his email address to Comcast.
Oh. Exactly. You just represent yourself as a PE civil engineer, so.
Okay. All right. So we'll keep that on time, right? Tower report? Chris, are you going to do the tower report?
I was prepared to do the tower report.
Okay, tower report.
As we've discussed in the past, the numbers are down because of the first 4 months of the year due to the weather. Mm-hmm. And so basically a quarter of the year, the numbers are way down.
Yeah, your 1568 Delta variance negative, your 1425 when we're in the month of March.
Right. So. Tough to make that number up, but we have brought it up, you know, somehow.
Looks like it falls off, though, doesn't it, Chris, like usually again in the fall or no? I mean, well,
it will, yeah, typically. Yeah. The busiest months are the summer months.
Yeah. Hopefully we can keep the numbers good.
In our summer months, if you look back at, you know, previous years, they were up. So we had, you know, over 2016, the month of June, we were up 7%, 1% in July, and 3% in August. Mm-hmm. So they were up. Like I said, it's hard to make up that deficit from the first 4 months and just 3 months.
Yeah.
Year over year, we're relatively flat, but last year was the best year in 5 years. So, we'll see what this year holds.
Okay. Okay. Any other input on that? Your state manager report?
Hey, a few things to report. I attended the Grand State Airport and Airfield Association Kasama meeting last week at Hampton Airfield. I got to meet a lot of people from other airports and engineers, et cetera. Nick and I were out there together. Good turnout for the meet and greet. We had our Wheels and Wings event this past weekend on the 16th, and we had a record turnout. We actually had 4,264 attendees through the door. That doesn't count all the people that were manning all the vehicles and the planes and the helicopter. We had approximately 40 vehicles from fire trucks to police command units, Loomis, the armored car was there, there was a crane there, all kinds of things. We had a bouncy house for the kids, there was a magician. Sandy had record food sales, actually ran out of food and water, and that was great.
First time ever.
And we also had a number of aircraft out there. We had two Navions, and they were letting people climb on the aircraft and get familiar with them. We had a Civil Air Patrol 182 out there. We had Bob Donadio's 414 Cessna that he was letting children climb all over the thing, and they had a blast. And we also had a military Army, New Hampshire Army National Guard helicopter, a Black Hawk UH-60, which drew crowds that were unbelievable. If you see the pictures on the website, the thing looks like it has wings because there are people lined up on both sides of it. And we had the state police participate with the motorcycle unit. And so overall, it was just a fantastic day. We had a little issue with the traffic midday that we resolved. And we also had a meeting this morning, Susan and I did down here with the Summer Fund Committee, and we talked about hiring police detail, a couple of officers next year to help with the traffic, because it really needs somebody that does that for a living to do it, because it was very busy. But overall, great event. Upcoming events, we have our... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think Sal made the suggestion that we consider having it next year at this time of the year, as opposed to when it originally was scheduled.
We had a discussion this morning at our meeting here at City Hall, and it's kind of mixed right now, the feelings as to when to do it. I would like to see it done on the same day. Some of the other committee members would like to see it, but there was one committee member that thought that it was in conflict with the Sullivan Farm Apple Festival, which it is. It's in conflict with that. But then again, there's a lot of events going on at that time of year, like the Hollis Old Home Days. And as the police officer, the PAL officer, pointed out, because there's events all throughout the fall.
Right.
So what's a better time? We're going to work on that. Maybe doing it the week before this past week may work out the best, so that we're not in conflict. The Sullivan Farm Apple Festival is a benefit for Salvation Army, and so we didn't really want to take away from any crowd. But with that being said, Kelly Overholzer is going to contact the Sullivan Farm people and find out what their numbers were. Maybe there was no conflict.
Maybe they increased
it. Yeah, it may, because the traffic was
unbelievable.
My opinion is to not do it on a holiday weekend.
Definitely not.
So. I think the 16th was great. You're talking about maybe, you know, the 7th or 8th or whatever.
That's Labor Day.
Right, Labor Day is the week before.
That's Labor Day, yeah. So, as long as that.
But, I mean, I think this worked out perfect for us.
Timing-wise, weather-wise, I think it was great. Not as sweltering.
Yeah, it's better than in the summer, because I understand, I haven't been there, but in the summertime, it was just too hot out there.
Very hot. Yeah.
And we got off easy with the cloud cover, too.
Plus, a lot of people are still on vacation.
Right.
In the summer.
My opinion,
I liked when it happened. It was great.
Well, clearly, the number of people showed up indicated the popularity of it.
Record.
So we need to probably encourage that without being the bad guy and,
right,
you know, messing around with
the. I guess another thing that they point out too was for these different events, the police and the fire department, they're spreading their equipment out throughout those different events. Well, we still had a great turnout. We had the bomb squad unit, the mobile command unit. We had a police officer with a vehicle, with a bicycle, and a motorcycle. So we had a great representation there. I don't know what they had at Sullivan Farm, but I believe that they had similar, you know, displays.
Alderman Sheldon?
Thanks. I think it's good to find out what Sullivan Farm did, but the turnout that we got could have been because it's on Sunday. The Sullivan Farm is down the road.
Right.
And if someone's going out for a family event for the weekend,
right,
you know, these aren't on opposite ends of the city. And it might be more difficult for that same family to come out the week before,
right,
and
the week after. Right.
Do it all at once. And
yeah,
some of that traffic we got could have been because people were passing by.
And they might have gone by Sullivan Farm.
And you know what the other thing is, Dave? When they come in, they're not going to spend 4 hours
right
at our event.
Normal,
they can blow through that probably less than an hour, and that explains why the traffic.
And they go out there.
Yeah, started at 11 o'clock exiting the place, and it was a disaster. And then they can go apple picking. And you know what? When I directed the traffic out of there, it was a good mix of cars going that way versus the other way.
Well, I think those are all ones that need to be.
Right. So we're gonna investigate it. Kelly is with Sullivan Farm.
The traffic was also due to the inability to access University Drive.
True.
Yeah. Because that's closed off, and we have one to get in and out. Which we don't know where, what that situation is next year.
Steve?
Why don't we take it one step further and cross promote them? They have literature for us, and we for them, and make a whole day out of it between the two of them.
Well, they're doing it for Southern County, so I'm not sure how that would translate.
We'd have to take that up with the Summer Fund Committee, but we can mention it.
Yeah, for sure. We're not the drivers on this thing. It's the city.
All right.
Chris, I do have one comment to make. I know somebody dropped off a good amount of food to the restaurant as a donation, wanted me to bring it over. I didn't see a lot of advertising for the food donations being collected for our event.
It wasn't in
every advertisement that was out there. It was prior to.
It just wasn't like, it didn't hit me in the face.
It was at the bottom of the page, I believe, on every one of those,
right,
for the end 68 hours.
I guess it just didn't hit me in the face. And
I'm sure that there were a lot of people who got there and found out about it at that time.
True,
right,
yeah.
Right. So I'm wondering what they
collected. They collected, it was nearly $600 worth of food. Which they were like, yeah, that's great. The more I thought about it, for 4,300 people,
yeah,
I would have thought there would have been more. So
yeah,
maybe we should try to push that a little harder next
and
year.
And I certainly would have pushed it if it hit me in the face, like a customer brought it to my attention. So, and I could, I'm just looking at it quickly. Oh, I know what's coming.
Look at the pictures.
I guess so. So maybe we'll just make sure we promote that a little better next year. So we have.
And next year, this year, I'd also like to give credit to Jeff DeSalvo from the Parks and Recreation Department. It was handed to him after we canceled the first event due to rain. It was handed over to him, and he's a new guy with the organization over there, and he ran with it. He did a fantastic job. All the vehicles that were there, he made all the recontact with all those people and got them there. I did the aviation part of it, but I've already been down in their office and spoke with his boss, and he did an excellent job.
Good.
And he and I talked, and next year it'll just be he and I doing it, and we're going to get together sooner, and it'll be even more organized.
Okay, good.
So, moving right along, we have a Gassama Golf Tournament this Friday, the 22nd. It's up at the Pease Trade Port. It's the third annual Pilots and Drivers Golf Tournament to benefit youth aviation education. Susan and I will be participating in the event along with Nick Ippolito and Matt Heron from Gale Associates. They've kindly extended an offer to us to be their guests at this. Thank you.
They're not very good golfers.
What are you talking about?
They're a good company, huh?
But you know what? We're going to look good.
We do this. Step off.
It's a charitable event.
So we're doing that. Other items of interest, anybody have any questions on the golf? Some other items of interest that I have, National Airport Authority, Joe Callahan, the guy that cuts all the grass, does all the maintenance of the airport. He's completed training with the state of New Hampshire to obtain a commercial not-for-hire pesticide applicator and supervisor's license. He actually completed that training yesterday. He has a little more studying to do, and then they'll schedule him with a testing date. He has to take four exams, and once he passes that, he'll get his license, which is something that we need for the airport. We don't have anybody right now that has that, so we can't legally apply any herbicides, pesticides, etc. One of the reasons we have a lot of grass growing up through all the cracks and the ramps everywhere is because this hasn't been done, and in the future we'll be able to pre-treat it in the early spring, and it shouldn't come up throughout the rest of the summer. The only way to handle it right now would be to go out there and weed whack and burn it all, but there's just too much of it. So Joe will get that license, and hopefully next year everything will look a lot better during the summertime, and along with fence lines that we need to maintain. So he'll be taking care of that. I had an informal meeting with James Smith, Executive Vice President of Southern New Hampshire University, and we had a meeting this morning. A group, myself, Sandy, Bob, Susan, Tim Cummings, and Steve Bolton, and we discussed a little bit of, perhaps we call it strategy, for our meeting with Mr. Smith that I have scheduled for next Tuesday, and just wanted to discuss their intentions moving forward with regards to the aviation tower building and possibly Hangar 85. That's all I have. Anybody have any questions for me?
Now, for the golf tournament, are you accepting donations? Is it too late for that? Too soon?
I think Gassama is. You could go on to the website. Yep, make a donation.
And I do want to say that the Wings and Wheels was really amazing, and you guys did a great job. Matt Barabee was amazing. He was so helpful to everybody, just running around, and it was really nice to see everybody participating. So a great day at the airport. Okay. Committee. Oh, sorry. I'm going to shoot the engineer.
Okay, thank you. I guess Matt Caron with Gale Associates for the recording, and I will go first and talk about the master plan update. You do have binders in front of you, although I see Director Duquette neglected to bring his from the master plan committee, but
because I've read it so many times.
I have another copy if you need one. I don't know how you want to handle this this evening. There's obviously a lot of information in there, chapters 1 through 4. Chapter 1 being the introduction chapter. Chapter 2 was the existing conditions. Chapter 3 is existing environmental conditions. And then chapter 4, probably most importantly, is the forecasting section.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Was any of this put on the website for comments or anything yet?
I thought it was supposed to be on the website when I talked to Sal, but I didn't see it when I went on to search for it. So.
I thought we had talked about putting it out there for people to kind of look at and hash out and stuff like that. I don't go on the website, I'm sorry. But, maybe that's...
Wait, when do you see it on the website?
Just the end of website.
Yes.
For
comment.
For comments.
Comment.
And
anything
from
the public.
Oh, okay. I believe that was decided a couple of
years ago.
A while back, I think.
Yeah.
I
didn't bring one.
Okay, well, we can put that up. Apologies for not having it out there. It would be my fault. We get it up to public comment.
So in the meantime, has anybody had a chance to, I don't know if Daryl has some of the others on the committee, right?
I mean, we've gone through it.
So Farrell and Joe and I know Chris, they sit on the master plan committee. So they've seen this chapter by chapter. Yeah. We've discussed this at MPC master plan committee meetings.
Right.
And the goal is to get through chapter 4 and then present it to the authorities.
Which is kind of where we're at.
Which is exactly where we're at.
Are we flip flop with the public input part, or?
I mean, to be honest with you, when it goes up on the website, I mean, I'm always open to taking public input and making changes if it's warranted. I don't think there's anything that says you know, once we're done with chapter 1 through 4 this evening, that we can't go back and revisit something and address it. I mean, certainly if there's something or some element that warrants going back and taking a look at it, I mean, we're happy to do that.
I did not find anything, you know, in these first four chapters that, you know, was mind-boggling. Alderman Shoneman, have you had a chance, I don't know, with the strategic planning, if any of these got passed around? Have you seen any of this yet?
I have not.
1 through 4, okay.
Is this 1 through 4?
It is.
Yes.
Yes.
It's pretty perfunctory.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's any huge changes in this?
No, I mean, if you want, I mean, I can kind of quickly go through what each chapter entails for everyone in the audience's edification.
Okay,
which
yeah.
shouldn't take too long. I don't want to take up too much of the time. But just for example, Chapter 1, being the introduction, it just gets into the history of the airport, things like where the name comes from, the governance, the aeronautical role of the airport, history of previously AIT-funded projects and other grants that the airport's received over the years, some of the master planning history at the airport, as well as the planning process that was decided upon moving forward with this plan itself. The existing facilities, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. It's an overview of what I'm saying, the existing facilities at the airport, the runway length, the hangars, number of hangars, airside facilities, landside facilities, fuel, things like that, FBOs that are located on the airport, support facilities, air traffic control, and things like that. The existing environmental conditions chapter takes a look at all the previous environmental work that has been done at the airport. All of the environmental assessments, for example, that have gone before the various state agencies, federal agencies, their comments back. We put together a plan in there that actually shows where the critical areas or the sensitive areas are on the airport. And the purpose of that is to help the airport, as we move forward, better understand where development potentially can take place because they're either in or outside of those sensitive areas. That's pretty much a summary of chapters 1, 2, and 3. The more important chapter, I think, in my opinion, is chapter 4, which is the forecasting section. What we did is we took a look at some of the available forecasting resources that the FAA produces, the terminal area forecast, the FAA aerospace forecast. We used the Interstate Airport Systems Plan, and we also used tower historical tower counts and records to start formulating projections for the airport as we start moving forward. We established an airport service area based on the home address of each based aircraft at the airport. Primary service area is anything within 15 miles of the airport. Secondary service area was anything that's within 25 miles. And from there, we started doing a comparison against what the terminal area forecast is projecting for the airport against some of the airports that are located within Nashua's service area. So Manchester, for example, Hanscom, Lawrence, Fitchburg, they're all within that 25-mile radius. So we, you know, crunched some numbers, did a little bit of comparison, came up with a base aircraft recommendation for the airport, came up with a operations forecast for the airport based on a lot of that information that was kind of crunched. I can say that what we did is, we compared that against several alternatives. We compared the base aircraft against a couple alternatives, forecasted operations against alternatives, and came out with a recommendation for the airport. They're relatively optimistic. I think things hopefully will start heading in the right direction. But this master plan, in reality, should be a living, breathing document and something that the airport is constantly referring back to and taking a look at, as I'm looking at Chris, to make sure you're going back to this thing and you know, updating it as we move along. So say, for example, there's a large influx of operations at the airport for whatever reason, analyzing what it is and why that's happening, and then start taking a look at the airport's capital improvement program to make sure that the infrastructure that's on the airport can adequately address, you know, the operations and the base aircraft needs for Nashua.
Alderman Shoneman?
Thanks. Can I ask a couple questions?
Sure.
Are you guys coming up with the numbers yourselves? I seem to recall a discussion some time ago where you were subletting this, some things out, some of this work.
No,
yes, you're doing it.
We're doing it ourselves.
Okay,
yep.
One of the things that is possibly about to change in New Hampshire is this registration fee issue.
Yep.
And is that something that you've taken a look at to say, if the registration fee were to be, structure were to be changed, we would expect to see this kind of trajectory versus this kind of trajectory, offering that kind of a...
We certainly mentioned that as one of the elements that we would want to go back and circle back and take a look at after the results of that happens. For the forecasting purposes, it's kind of difficult to pinpoint what that actual growth would be. And what I mean by that is, when we look at the terminal area forecast that's produced by the FAA, they take a look, they have this model that takes a look at all of the historical operations for the airport, including base aircraft, itinerant versus local, and they use that and then they project what's going on, you know, nationally, regionally, and they give a number for national. They actually break it down and after it gets its own set of numbers. The aerospace forecast looks at trends and other, you know, aviation trends and things like that. So we kind of compiled all that and then compared what's going on with NASA against those three, four other airports that I had mentioned. So to actually specifically get into the bump increase because of the House bill, we did get down to that level.
And one of the things that we deal with here anytime you're trying to make forecasts is although those airports are within a 25 nautical mile range, and we were all in the state of Texas, it wouldn't matter.
Right.
But we're operating under very different legal frameworks.
Sure.
And it skews that 25-mile radius analysis, which I think is good because someone down there could be here, mm-hmm. except for the fact that we have rules here that don't really welcome that.
Right.
We had a hearing just the other day, and one of the things that repeatedly came out from some of the committee members up in Concord on this issue was, what's going to happen if we change this? Has anyone done any kind of forecast on what's going to happen? So it's a good conversation about forecasts. First off, for them to be optimistic is fine, I guess, but you know, we need realistic. So we don't want to be inflating it. We don't want to be deflating it, but we don't want to be inflating it because people are making decisions based on these things. But if wouldn't it be too difficult to get some sort of sense if Nashua, for instance, given its size and proximity to Boston, is smaller than we would expect compared to the other airports in the 25 nautical miles, I think it could be a reasonable conclusion to say, well, gee, if the rules were the same, we wouldn't expect it to be smaller than Hanscom, for instance, where they're just booming and we're relatively so much quieter. Mm-hmm. I think kind of things can help move that legislation along.
Right. I think that's definitely extremely important point that you're bringing up. And it just gets back to this being the living, breathing document. Because like you say, there are dollars attached to some of the infrastructure improvements that the airport's going to be looking to make based on what they're seeing for increases in base aircraft and operations. And that's something that certainly that we've talked about with this document is that there'll be, you know, interactive tables for airport management to go in and revise and adjust the numbers based on, you know, real-time data that they're actually seeing. So those type of elements certainly going to be included into this master plan.
Right, and another aspect that is near and dear to my heart is the de-icing, and that kind of figures in with the whole plan, too. I mean, I learned a lot reading this over about commercial, you know, you have to, in order to get the FAA funding, certain parts of it, the infrastructure, has to be commercial, which we are not. However, some things can be funded, you know.
Right.
So, you know, I guess, financially, I believe the registration fee ties into whether or not we're going to have enough money eventually to pay for some of this, not, you know, certainly not commercial. That can be reworked at some point too if need
yep.
be. Right.
Right. And that's why it's kind of important for me, I was hoping this evening to get buy-in from the authorities because what I want to do is get with the Master Plan Committee, get with the Strategic Planning Committee next, because now that we've got this forecast in place, start taking a look at what those future capital improvements should be, whether it's de-icing or...
Because what is the next chapter? Right?
Really? The next chapter is facility requirements.
Right.
And just for everyone's understanding, so the terminal area forecast, which is produced by the FAA, if for some reason the airport's we come up with some sort of forecast for the airport that's outside of 5% within the first 5 years, and I think it's 10% over the next 20 years, you actually have to send that off. It has to be approved by Washington to be outside of the terminal area forecast for each airport. So the good news is we're definitely within that. My recommendation for the operations is to maintain what the TAP is projecting and move forward in that direction, because the other three alternatives that we compared the TAP against, they're all nominal. So it's not like some of them were outrageously high, some were outrageously low. They were all kind of within the same ballpark, so it makes sense. There's no unique circumstances or anything that indicated that Nashua should be, jumping outside of the terminal area forecast.
So maybe to jump on Alderman Sharman's point just a little bit more, the terminal area forecast doesn't necessarily, what are the variables that it takes into play when it does its forecasting? I'm assuming it's not a localized variable like piece of legislation for a particular state.
It's
more
because they're doing this nationwide.
Right. So industry trends or economic trends or things like that.
Yeah. And so that's why I'm saying, the good news is with, as Joe, you and I have talked about in the past, and Chris and others know, when the airport does its capital improvement program, that's something that occurs every single year, and it can be modified every single year. So it's not like the forecast is going to pigeonhole the airport into purchasing the next 5 years worth of capital improvement projects that, like $1 million, let's just say. Each year we can revisit that. So if something happens with the House bill, then we get back to Chris and say, hey, this has changed. What are you actually seeing? What's the power seeing for based aircraft, for operations? Maybe we should be adjusting this master plan and revisiting the capital improvement program, because something? We don't have enough hangars. We don't have enough tie-down space. Things like that that need to be moved up on the CIP, and other items may need to be pushed back. So,
Alderman Schoen.
Yeah, thanks. That makes it sound like, I think it's very useful, but it makes it sound like it's a reactive kind of a thing. I understand that how the CIP can be changed based on the numbers we're actually seeing. I was just looking for some kind of analysis from somewhere, from some quarter, that way we could say, take the contrary and say, look, this is where we're at now, and this is what could happen. Mm-hmm. If this bill passes, because that's the big question. The big question is, what's going to happen? Has anyone said, one representative kept on saying, well, it's anecdotal. That's true. All we have is stories. All we have.
But you just talked that there is a graph, a chart, where you're showing the growth, I think it was 5%. Something.
For the operations?
Yeah.
That's the nominal baseline growth, the sort of...
It's a 0.2 average annual growth rate of 0.26%.
That's a growth chart.
That's definitely in there. That's based off the TAP. It's calculating that the airport operations are going to increase from 57,783, which is your 2016 base, to 63,135 in 2037. So a 9.3% overall growth, average annual growth rate of 0.26%. And those numbers and that table and everything I have can certainly be added on to and updated and adjusted based on real time.
Dave, maybe you can see that table.
I think it sounds great. I was looking for something that would say it's 2.6% per year, whatever the number is.
Yes.
Yep.
But if we pass this legislation, it can be 8%.
Okay.
Well, that's the kind of thing where we see this is how we're tracking now. But if we do this, this is what can happen.
So I think
maybe it's just not something we do.
So Nick and Matt, so have you guys, Massachusetts, different places, are you able to give us a comparison? Like what you've seen happen, what could happen, what might happen?
I think that would take an extraordinary amount of market research and interviews with different operators, corporate and private. It's not in the purview of the master plan to do that type of analysis, but I agree. I think it should be done absolutely. Just to give you more.
Yeah, I think it ought to be done. I thought maybe you could piggyback on this effort, but it sounds like.
Well, I know you were there, Chris, when Carol DeWall from NACOT was down, it was one of these things that we had talked about. There was a lot of these outside influences, that certainly being probably one of the more paramount ones. It's not within the scope of work, and I think would be a significant amount of effort to actually track something like that down, which is why I think it almost has to be and I don't want to say reactionary, but something that we try and capture in real time as opposed to reacting to it, you know, 6-7 months after the fact.
Just general question, and I kind of on the same track. If our growth is forecast to be 2.6% per year, is Hanscom's forecast to be the same, or is it forecast to be that?
Hanscom, I would have to take a look at the tab.
Well, they know.
If you hold on.
Hold on, please.
I do have Hanscom in there.
Yeah.
Okay, so projected space aircraft. Sorry. Okay, let's see. They were, they're 0.2%, average annual growth rate of 0.2% through the planning.
And we're 0.26. We're about the same.
We're 0.26, they're 0.2, according to the data.
Does it also take a look at state averages? Like, what's the average for the state of New Hampshire compared to the state of Massachusetts just by airport?
The TAP just breaks it down by airport, but what I did in this forecast, I wish it was on the web so you had a chance to look at it. But what you'll see is I've gone through and I've actually done comparisons for Nashua versus the state of New Hampshire versus the region versus the United States. And I've drawn parallels that way as well, to kind of the most logical way to develop a growth rate for the airport.
Do you have that where?
That's in Chapter 4 of the Master Plan. Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
We put that on our website.
Yeah.
Can we get an electronic copy of that now?
Yeah, I sent it to Farrell. My understanding was he was going to put, I know he's not here, to defend himself, but yeah, he was going to, I thought he was going to put it up in time for the
meeting. Yeah, I wasn't aware that it was going to be.
All right, we'll put it up tomorrow.
We'll put it up tomorrow.
Yeah.
So,
at this point, correct?
I'm sorry, I did. I printed you that copy.
I
have
it.
Yes.
I know.
Okay. So
I.
So you have the electronic.
I have electronic.
I don't have the electronic. Yes. Yes. At this point, I don't know if I can make a motion.
Number one, I mentioned I had made some comments to Merrill, and I remembered what they were, but
okay.
I can't find the second. It's where you did, where the document describes who we support, who our customers are.
Yes,
it's in the answer. I can't find it. And I made the comment that we did not make any mention of law enforcement or medical evacuations, both of which we are reasonably active with at the airport. And I think that those are two ingredients that probably should be added. I know my daughter's a nurse at St. Joe's, she's involved in the air vacs all the time on the airport.
Yeah.
And we know we have law enforcement.
Yep.
The other thing is, are you looking for tonight a go-no-go on this?
So the intent was to get buy-in. My understanding was everyone, and I know there's individuals from the Master Planning Committee that have looked at it, and obviously my understanding is they've recommended this to move forward, otherwise it wouldn't be here. But it was for the authorities to approve this so that, like I said, we can get the next meeting put together, which is the MPC meeting, and get with the Strategic Planning Committee so we can start looking at some of the facility needs for the airport.
So at this point, I'm prepared to, since this is a working document and changes can be made, I'm prepared to entertain a motion to approve this. And, you know, we can always take input, make changes.
It would have been nice if it had been on the site, on the website for a month and people would look at it.
Right.
That hasn't happened. It doesn't mean it can't happen. It doesn't mean that anybody who looks at it can't suggest something that could be
right. Of course.
But if you need a go-no-go from the board, I'm prepared to do it.
So just as a top-down look, then, obviously it's still a draft because we're still adding
staff. Still in draft form.
What's the final version, just to give everybody some sort of scope of time? Like, what's the goal? Is quite a ways out for this.
At this point, with the forecast in place, the forecast still needs to go through NHDOT and the FAA, as well as the past muster with them, which I don't see any reason why it wouldn't. NHDOT has been an active partner on the Master Planning Committee meeting, so they've seen that there's nothing that they've come back and said, oh no, that's probably not going to fly, so I suspect that'll work. What this does, this just gives me the momentum to now start moving forward with some of the facility needs and all the other good stuff that we're going to start presenting to the authority and to the public, which is going to be alternative.
The document never becomes something in stone. It's always subject to change and update.
I believe that that is the intent of the master plan. I realize that doesn't always happen within communities and within certain organizations, but my feeling is that the last thing this should do is sit on a shelf somewhere and collect dust.
It'll the bill could pass in 6 months and all the forecast data is out the window.
Yep. And we can.
All right, so I make a motion that we approve the draft airport master plan document as it currently exists, subject to continued updates, and allow the committee itself to proceed with the next phase.
I second.
Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Good.
Motion is passed.
Trying to sound more like that.
Yeah, we'll tag team it.
Is that it?
You guys have any other questions regarding the master plan project? If not, I'll take over. I'm going to try to speak louder tonight because with the comments on my portion last month. Project number two is the pavement reconstruction and maintenance project, which is now substantially complete. Gail has coordinated with Continental Paving, who's the contractor, on the status of as-built drawings. Since I sent this to Sue, I've actually received those drawings, but not had a chance to review them yet. And Bruce Bauer from Continental has also delivered all of the aerial photographs and obliques, which I'll deliver to the airport at some point in the near future here, but it's going to be a large format, 40 by 40, gator board mounted aerial overhead of the whole airport, which I think would go great in the administration building. There will be one final reimbursement request that goes along with the project closeout report. Those will be prepared concurrently just because once that final reimbursement goes out, there's no way to recapture money that we spend or the airport spends or the contractor spends to prepare that closeout document. So they'll be prepared at the same time and sent out concurrently. Recommended actions of the authority would be to sign the final reimbursement upon request and submit any final invoices for sponsored administration fees to Gail so they can be incorporated if there are any. Any questions regarding the pavement maintenance project?
Do you need us to do any?
No motion required. Project number three is the runway 1432 groove seal and remark project. And I apologize, these notes are a little bit out of date here given the events of the past week, but it's my understanding that the authority has received a grant offer from the state of New Hampshire. Gail is available to assist in preparing a response to that grant offer. But once those funds are in place, Gail will prepare the notice of award for the contract and the contract for the contractor's execution. The contractor performing the grooving operations has indicated to Gail that their schedule has filled up for the fall and that if possible they'd like to push off the grooving until the spring. Gail's recommendation to make a motion to encourage the contractor to try and fit the grooving in this year per the schedule. If all else fails, however, I personally do not believe that the quality of the finished product would be compromised by performing it in the spring. However, you would go to winter without the benefits of the pavement surface.
Do you know why they want to put it on?
The grant came in so late that I think their schedule has just filled up at this point. Speaking to the prime contractor who's still coding in, Cardinal Rubin is the subcontractor then that's performing Rubin. And Seal Coding said that in his conversation, Cardinal said that they can still give it everything they've got this year, but it would really take a lot of pressure off of them as it moved to the spring. So, again, I don't see any reason why it would be.
My gut feeling is to ask them to do it as planned. We talked about the timing, the weather, you know, the customers being put out. So my gut feeling is to ask them to, you know, to do it as planned.
Okay. And that's absolutely fine. What I'll do is I will relay the authorities' overall outlook on the situation to them. Again, anything that changes that construction schedule would have to be submitted in writing to the authority for approval. They have not done that at this point. I think right now it's sort of in the conversation stage. So
I'd like to also support that.
Do you want to take? Do you need a motion to, or you just want to relay our?
Correct. The third recommended action would be to provide Gettle direction on how to proceed and coordinate the contract.
We've been moving along with the assumption that it's going to be group in the fall. We have leaves on the tree. It's going to minimize the sound.
Okay.
And if we do it all next year, that means that our clients will be experiencing an extended closing of the airport. I mean, it's going to interfere more with airport operations.
At least the more coincidence
certainly
perceived
along nighttime ops would be affected more so than otherwise if it were done in the fall. Because for the grooving to take place, it's a nighttime closure only. I believe it's from 8 p.m. to 7 a.m. That last hour the tower is open being to redirect any flights that may try to come in once it's closed.
And the cold weather is better for it, right? You know.
The cold weather is better. I don't think that Nashua's runway is still susceptible to heat-related movement, but colder is always better.
Joe, what are your feelings?
I'm going to make a motion. Yeah, I'm supporting. I live in this world. The contractors have a good year. They can put this one in the bank, too. So I'll go ahead and make a motion that we direct Gale to proceed with encouraging, but nicely, the contractors, general and the subs, to proceed with the work as scheduled for the fall of 2017.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Other recommended actions would be to provide Gale with a copy of the grant offer once received. It's been received, and Gail will need the cover letter that came with it, not the actual offer package, just for our files, and then to complete the forms required to accept the grant and forward back to, in this case, NEC.
Where is the grant document now?
It's in the office.
Your office. So you need a motion. We need to get the chairman signed, right?
Yes.
And get it to you.
Certainly. If the chairman is not authorized to sign that without a motion.
No, I'm prepared to do that right now.
Does it mean, do we need a motion?
Yes, we just signed it.
Okay.
So I make a motion to authorize Chairman Rosenblum to sign and execute New Hampshire DOT grant offer relative to project SBG 12-18-2017, which is Group CO and Mark Runway 14-32.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. We have a new project on the agenda this month. That is the 2018 purchase of snow removal equipment project. This project is for the design, bidding, and acquisition of a piece or pieces of snow removal equipment to use during winter snow clearing operations. The estimated project funding, as you can see, everything is to be determined at this point. The reason for that being we don't know how many pieces of equipment, what attachments we would like to acquire. It's all going to be subject to the availability of funds, which I've been working with Chris on obtaining. So the scoping meeting for the project was conducted on August 2nd at Gale's office in Bedford. Based on the information gathered during this meeting, the airport is eligible for two pieces of equipment. The preferred pieces being a grader with wing plow and a front-end loader with push box. The estimated project cost for both pieces of equipment is approximately $450,000. Funding for this project using FAA discretionary funds is unlikely due to the project's rank on the national funding priority list. SRE ranks at, I believe, a 46. And the threshold for discretionary funding is 48. So we're just below that threshold, meaning the only funds available to purchase this equipment would be the airport's non-primary entitlement, which is $150,000 for 2018.
Now, Chris, I'm sorry, I don't remember the answer. You and I talked earlier about the money that we did not use from...
That's being used towards the group and seal.
Okay, so that's already going to be gone.
In order to fund the entirety of the group and seal project,
okay.
That $150,000 from Whitefield in 2017 had to be put towards the money.
The way the scoring of our project for the snow removal equipment is too low. Or lower than where it should be, or where we'd like it to be.
Well, that's nationwide. Unless you're a commercial airport, the maximum priority ranking you can receive for SRE is 46.
Okay, so we're still in competition with other non-commercial airports. Then.
Correct.
Okay.
However, the availability of funds. Every year, the FAA releases their funding priority rankings and a threshold that they think the available funds will cover. So if projects come in under budget or if projects get pushed, that discretionary could be used to fund those low priority projects. However, if there are other projects higher in priority that were not programmed, the funds would go to them first and then trickle down to the low priority.
So our snow removal equipment is competing with potentially runway repairs somewhere else.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
One thing that Carol told us is the FAA's on a big push this year for what's called a RIM project, Runway Incursion Mitigation, and those are ranking at the top of the chart right now for safety reasons, obviously, and the average cost of one of those projects is over $15 million. So those projects, and I believe Manchester has one, he said those projects are going to heat up a lot of this funding, so that the likelihood of getting any excess or leftover for projects scoring lower than 48 is highly unlikely.
So I have a question on this. So you were explaining to me earlier, Chris, about the taxiways that go right to the runway, right?
Yep.
And all of a sudden that's a problem?
Well, not all of a sudden.
Well, studying the job over the past few
years. The speed
years.
Of government is the problem.
Yeah.
That's been a problem, but now.
Probably 25 years.
Whether it be aircraft or snow removal equipment, ground vehicles, when they have that just straight shot to the runway, will tend to lose track of where they are. They may cross the whole line inadvertently.
How often does that happen?
Enough so that they thought implementing this RIM project push was worth it. And this could be multiple years. I believe it was 2004, somewhere in that range, when the FAA decided that runway safety areas were the next big push, and it took them until now to get all of those projects done. So it could be 10, 12 years of RIM projects.
So that would entail moving or, existing taxiway.
For Nashua, it would be taxiway Charlie and Delta, just having the same coming off the ramp space, the same connection to taxiway Alpha, just moving the section between Alpha and the runway offset.
Like an S-turn almost, or some sort of
I would,
you have to take some
ideally, action. It would be a longer run.
Right.
But yeah, making pilots turn and think about where they're going is mitigation for those.
And I think this came about, I know that Lincoln Labs has been doing studies now for years with the federal DOT and FAA on these incursions, and they've compiled a lot of data. Somebody from our airport's been working on that project, so I know about this firsthand. And I think that's where all this came about, where suddenly it's here now. They compiled the data, they said there is a problem, and they're going to do something about it.
So that's going to be kind of pushed up on our list too, right? Or should be, or...
Well, it's a target of opportunity. If the taxiway relocation project is something that the Strategic Planning Committee...
Yeah, we were talking about
considering, It may be right. worth moving it up because the chance of getting it funded are
because originally when we were going through the CIP, we were like, what's this actuary? You know, it was kind of like, yeah, let's put that down the list a little bit, but then this thing came up, so it's like,
right.
well, if they're going to start digging, throw that in with it, and then you get it all done. So it may.
So I'd like to stay on the board until we get GIC and registration.
I guess what it boils down to is we go back to what Nick was saying. The likelihood of us getting any of this excess funding
right.
for the SRE stuff that we need now that ranks lower than 48 is highly unlikely.
Right. So to answer your question, so, yes, we're direct competition, which is nuts.
But at the same time, you live in part of the world where there's more snow.
Yeah.
Correct. And there should be, I agree,
40-year-old machine now out there.
So Nick's working on something else right now that he'll tell you about.
Certainly. Yeah. So does that answer your question?
I had a question about that. On your... We're talking about the mandatory construction time, the red sign, correct?
Surface painted or the whole sign?
Well, you have the signs to tell you where that actual whole short line is. So you actually get 2 points of reference here. Somebody's coming up on an intersection. I'm trying to figure out how they're not seeing either one of them. Is it the pals that are doing it, or is it...
It's a combination. I believe the majority of the runway incursions that have been documented are snow removal equipment.
If that's the case, then why not just take the money and train before they actually get in those vehicles? They need to be trained about it and make sure they understand instead of spending all this money on something that's.
We don't get to make those decisions.
Unfortunately, that decision was made higher up.
It's not our money. Yeah. Well, it is our money technically, but it's coming from higher up, so it's not our decision to make.
All we can do is capitalize on the things we're forced to do.
Correct. But it's gotten to the point now where when we send preliminary plans to the FAA for review, they will ask us to move to actually where we can the runway to.
So, I mean, as far as expedition travel, or I mean, they're never ready enough as it is. I don't think, if it's that big of a deal, safety wise, to these guys. Either train them, I'm just going to, if you're going to pass it along to the people above our pay grade, and you either get the thing, I mean, the great rate, for God's sake, then the line is right yellow. How the hell do you not see them? And if they're having trouble with it, they need to be made, it needs to be made clear. I know I can look at my students, I hammer the hell out of them for that very reason. And if that's not enough, then just put a flashing bulb in there. Whatever it takes. Right? Instead of making all these different changes as far as passing ways.
So moving on, so what we should do is just purchase a new shovel and a snowball.
Well, or our neighbors. I'm sure you're going to talk about that next.
Go ahead, Nick. Yeah.
Okay. So continuing, like the likelihood of receiving discretionary funds is minimal. The airport may use their 2018 non-primary entitlements, which total $250,000, to pay for the project. The remaining $300,000 required to acquire both pieces of equipment could be secured either by exchanging it or purchasing it or trading for it with another airport in New Hampshire. I reached out to Carol at NHDOT, and she let me know that both the Mount Washington Regional Airport as well as the Dean Memorial Airport do not have projects this year, meaning they could potentially, the way Whitefield did last year, either give you or sell you their entitlements.
Which are
100,000
each.
Yes. Just like we did last year.
We would need a lot of things to fall into place to get the full amount for both pieces of equipment. I'm still hopeful. Good news is I got a call back from Dean Memorial today, and they are interested in a swap or a sale of their entitlements. I've been beating down the door at Whitefield for some time. I have not gotten a call back yet, but I may just have to go up there.
So we need to decide if, you know, if we can get by with one piece, if we can't, you know, if we need to, or if we want to, if we're unable to give that money.
There's a lot of moving parts here. I'm technically doing work without a contract to do so, but I can't finalize Gail's contract with the airport for the project, and so we know how many pieces of equipment we want to get. So I'm sort of doing it at risk right now, with the hopes that the project actually does happen.
We did come up with another source of fund, possible source of funding. At our scoping meeting, Matt had brought the point up to Carol that she had leftover money from the previous year. Can we get some of that? And the answer was, I remember exactly what she said.
Well, it wasn't necessarily a no.
Right.
It just seemed more like, I think she said, I think quote unquote, that was the ace in the hole maybe? Or something like that?
So there is money sitting there, and I think if that's left over, we have a chance at securing some of those funds as well.
Let me just interrupt real quick. Alderman Sean, do you have to go to your other meeting?
Yes, I do.
Do you have any other input? Or
no, I think it sounds, okay. Sounds good. Chris can update you on a meeting time.
Mr. Sean,
yes.
Would it be all right if I emailed you? I do have some ideas on sort of a rudimentary method for determining an increase.
That'd be great. Do you have my email address?
I am sure if I'm on the website.
Yeah,
I'll
say
that.
Sure.
But I'll speak to you often.
Great. Thank you.
I'm sorry, what was it? It was state apportionment funding from 2017.
So the state gets $800,000 a year that they can divvy out as they see fit. And there is leftover money in that.
So we just have to ask Matt.
I will say, Matt, come on, has Matt come up with any good new tradables lately?
I will say,
so the FAA did not end up releasing discretionary funds for this year. The project got funded by the two pieces of non-primary entitlement that the airport had accrued, plus $300,000 of that $800,000 in state apportionment. So NHDOT has given Nashua a good chunk of their apportionments for 2017, which, depending on what other projects are going on, may be viewed as preferential treatment if they then give us another pot of money.
If nobody else,
if nobody else has a contention for it, then absolutely. I think Carol is of the mindset where she wants to help airports as much as humanly possible.
And it's almost the, well, it's at the end of the fiscal year, let's see.
October 1st, September.
Yeah, yeah. September 30th is the drop-in date. So it's not to say that FAA would not release discretionary funds, although at this point it's not seeming very likely.
So do you need us to do anything to have you ask for that money? Or have you, because if September 30th, is that's the end of it?
If nobody else, to give it away or give it back by the end of September?
Well, this is for 2017. So she's already.
Oh, so 2000.
She's already awarded $300,000 for the Groove and Seal project from the 2017 apportionment.
Okay.
What projects are on the docket for 2018 is still unknown.
Which is where the snow removal falls in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, again, Gail has reached out to the Mount Washington Regional Airport as well as Dean Memorial to solicit interest in donating or selling their non-primary entitlements. To account for the extra $300,000 necessary to purchase both pieces. So again, recommended actions by the authority would be to authorize Gail to work with Chris to acquire the non-primary entitlements for the above-referenced project. That being, if entitlements are, if there's an agreement in place, then they would have to come before the board again for their final approval.
Yep.
Sure. Yep. So I'd like to make a motion that the board authorizes Gail Associates to work with airport management to do the necessary legwork to secure additional funding for the 2018 CAP SRE acquisitions.
Okay. Do you second it? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And then the last note here is Gail has submitted a draft scope and fee for the project to the authority for review. However, at this time, the funding of the two pieces is not known, so the final scope cannot be prepared. Once funding has been secured for one or both pieces, Gail will finalize the scope and fee and forward to the authority for review. No other action necessary at this time. Any other questions regarding project number five? And then under general items, the airport's 2018 through 2020 DPE plan was approved by the FAA on September September 8th. No further action is required on that, and that, I just want to point out, was entirely prepared and submitted by Jackie from our office. So any recognition for that should go to her.
What is the period?
2018 through 2020. The next item is the CIP. The airport's annual CIP meeting was conducted with NHDOT the same Tuesday that we held the scoping meeting at Gail's office in Bedford. The resulting changes will be made by NHDOT upon completion of all of the state CIP meetings, and then she'll distribute the revised CIPs to the airports and consultants when those are done. The next bullet here is the de-icing research. At the request of Authority Member Duquette, Dale compiled some information on de-icing equipment for the airport. The results of that research are included in the back of the packets. It was added here just so the authority is aware that all of the work required to compile that information has been done at no cost to the authority or to the airport. That's just something that Gail did on our own time to benefit the client. And then finally, there was an issue that Susan had identified regarding some unreimbursed expenses on the property acquisition at the Cliss and Alcorn properties on the corner of Pine Hill and Sharon Ave. Mm-hmm. It was brought to Gail's attention that several receipts for sponsors admin relating to the 2015 property acquisitions were never submitted to the FAA for reimbursement. It was determined through my research with Susan that the unreimbursed receipts were sent to Gail at the time they were received. However, they were never included in reimbursement. So that being on us, Gail has issued a check for the to cover those expenses in the amount of $2,467.47. And moving forward, it's Gail's commitment to avoid omissions like that.
Good job, Susan.
Good job, Susan.
She was pretty good.
What was the project that you said Jackie was responsible for?
Jackie was responsible for the DBE plan.
Sorry?
The Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Plan. That was all her, and she did a great job.
Okay. I like that.
Okay.
Not many people don't. I do have a couple of other comments. Gail has acquired a number of drones for use in our building envelope division, but I've been asked to gauge interest from the authority about bringing them to the airport to do some marketing photos, sort of around the tower. We would coordinate with the tower, obviously. But I think it would be great to get some photos of, you know, projects that have been completed from the air, under controlled conditions, of course, both for the authority and for Gail. Just wanted to gauge a man in the room for that.
Can I ask a question? The aerial photos that Bill Green, Continental, provides to us, who does those, and what are is the platform an aircraft, I would imagine, not a drone?
Yes, it's an aircraft. I believe Cole East, out of North Adams, Massachusetts, does the majority of aerial photography. They're the only ones with the calibrated equipment and aircraft to do it. So I know that Cole East does the vast majority. I believe there are a couple of other small outfits that do it as well. But those mapping quality cameras mounted to the aircraft and the equipment necessary to get to the proper scale for those photos.
So because they're up so high, they're not going to capture what you think it could with the drone. Okay.
So are these?
Well, the drone is more for ground. I mean, maybe 40 feet up would be the upper limit of how high they would be. Like it, you know, at 12,000 feet or something like that.
The marketing things you're talking about, from out photos or brochures or what, you know, how much, how many, and where?
You do like before and after photos of projects and put them up on the airport's website. So as a project's going through the stages of completion, the website maybe getting updated.
Just around different places. And is that an expense? Or?
No, that would be completely on Gale.
I think we should make sure we just get.
Yeah,
first dibs on good stuff for our own marketing purposes as well.
Absolutely.
You know, why don't we let Chris and Susan work on that? Are you fine with that?
That's an operational thing.
Yeah.
So we'll just say that's an operational thing, and we'll let Chris and Susan decide. We'll let Susan decide if she can tell.
Sure. And we have people at our Weymouth office who are taking the FAA drone pilot course and being certified. So. It would all be done within the confines of the regulations.
Okay.
I just know that certain airports have different outlooks on drones.
I think it would be nice.
Well, yeah, we'll just coordinate these activities with the tower, and it shouldn't be a problem at all.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
I'm all for it, and I look forward to seeing what kind of photos we get out of
it. Well, I'm interested as well. And then Matthew, do you want to speak about the comments on this?
Not at the time. Not in public.
Okay. So that's the end of Gail's update. Any questions?
Okay. Anybody have any questions for the engineer? Not you, Steve. Anyone else? Okay. All right. Moving forward. Director Woods is not here for the master plan. These are committees, right?
Right.
Master plan and strategic planning.
Right.
Do you want to cover?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we pretty much hit up all the master plan and stuff, so it sounds like we're going to be moving forward on the next meeting here.
Yep.
As soon as you
I think the best thing to do it, I mean, unless you disagree with me, we had talked about getting both of those groups together, getting on parallel tracks, so I think that's...
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah, there's Chairman Rosenblum and Alderman Schoenemann are the only two other people that aren't already in the meetings with you guys anyways. But on that note, for the segue over to strategic stuff, as I mentioned probably last month, you know, we were, on the strategic committee, we were looking for haystacks to put needles in, and vice versa. It was getting very confusing for us. So we got set straight by Gail on sort of the get out of the granular and get into the higher level stuff, which we started to do. So 2 weeks ago, maybe earlier this month, we met, and I had done sort of just a brain dump on our mission statement, and just started asking myself questions about, you know, how are we this? How are we not this? What could we be? What could we not be? And it was a good discussion. We were there for probably 2 hours. We kind of came to the point of we're at a bit of a crossroads strategically. A lot of it's going to be really a function of this HB 124. So we kind of divided it into two piles, if you will. Part of our mission statement is the attractions of businesses and all that good stuff and all the infrastructure and all of the great things that would come with that. But we're not necessarily going to want to go down a track of actively trying to build things if there will be no traffic and no business and none of that to really take advantage and support it. So that's what initiated my call to Nick about the de-icing, because we thought, well, we don't want to completely abandon it. We want to keep a little bit of a hook in there right now. But what's one thing that we could do that would be a benefit both if HB 124 goes nowhere and if it explodes and takes off and we get slammed with much traffic? And de-ice is something that's been kicking around for years. We agreed that we started to need to understand a little better what does that mean. And Nick, you probably want to just do, you can probably summarize quicker than I can, just sort of the up and down. Nick did a great job summarizing in an email that just gave us the real sort of like, you're not going to be Logan Airport, and you may be able to do a little better than a pumper truck on a Winnie, but there's a bunch of in between. So I'll let Nick quickly just sort of just run through that.
So the brief summary would be that the FAA would pay for the spray truck, the tanks, and things required for the actual application of the de-icing agents. However, they do not fund the de-icing pad if you're not a commercial service airport. And de-icing pad is an area large enough for your design aircraft with 12 feet of pavement all around it so that the de-icing trucks can move around the aircraft, complete with basically catch basins to capture the excess de-icing agents and then send them either to a publicly owned wastewater treatment plant or to a holding tank, which is then pumped out by a service that the airport would have to acquire. So if again, you're not eligible for the Logan Airport setup and you need more than the Keene setup, which is a squirt gun on a truck.
Right, the proper truck on the way. Yeah.
The alternative would be to apply for and get funding for everything that is eligible, and then take the upcoming ramp reconstruction as a target of opportunity to insert airport purchase structures to create that pad, which would have to be coordinated closely with the FAA. Because they will reconstruct the ramps for you, but they will not pay for the environmental review that is required. They will not pay for the buildings to house the equipment. They will not pay for the fluids themselves. So those things would be acquired on the airports.
So this would be a cost to us. Now, what about the FBO? Good luck with that. Don't they often contribute to that?
The airport, I guess, primarily put the infrastructure in place. The FBOs run the equipment, sometimes only the equipment.
Okay, so it's about the infrastructure that's on the airport?
Unless you guys would like to start receiving carriers.
So,
now let me ask a question about funding for that. Where does that rank? I can't remember where it ranks.
Priority-wise?
Yeah.
I believe it's a safety-driven project, and it would rank above the threshold for funding. But I would have to look into that. I can't say.
So there's a possibility that we could get the equipment. Strong possibility. Let me ask you another thing. I know that we've talked in the past about Carol had this discussion with you and I when we went up to Concord that day. There are private institutions that offer grants outside of the federal grants. I wonder if we could seek out some of those.
Absolutely.
I know that
the AE Systems has a aviation sort of grant program.
What about Coltman?
There's companies like that. We may even look to the manufacturers of corporate jets. They may say, well, if you put this in place, we may sell some more Gulfstreams or some more Bombardiers or things like that. I think there's a lot of avenues to look at for the private grants.
And part of this was also support. I think, Chris, when we had our meeting, you were talking about some conversations you had recently, I think the day or two before we had our meeting, with operators that were like, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
We would love that. We would fully support that. So, again, trying to balance the idea of if HB 124 doesn't go anywhere, there's at least, anecdotally, the idea that we would, at a minimum, help our customers that we have here today attract some just organically, right, that aren't coming here that would normally come here, but because of that, don't.
The ice thing is definitely up there on all corporate pilots I've seen.
Right.
There's some benefits to it outside of just saying we have the icing to attract business, but we have a lot of aircraft that have to reposition due to the fact that we do not have it. So they leave our airport, and I had mentioned this, I think it was to Greg, and I said, well, no, then they're not buying fuel here. It's like, no, that doesn't really affect it. And I talked to some of the pilots, I said, well, it does affect it because we can't take off here with full fuel, we go to Manchester to reposition for de-icing because we can't land in Manchester with full fuel.
Correct.
So it is affecting fuel sales. Mm-hmm.
Squirt the plane, get it up to Manchester, and then gas it up there.
Right.
Does that AAA funding depend on the infrastructure being funded and or built before they'll consider it? Or
that is a really good question. In my review of the AIP funding handbook, I did not come across any information.
So theoretically, we could get FAA funding for the equipment. get the equipment, have it on the airport, but can't use it because we don't have the...
Like the infrastructure to support that. Mm-hmm.
Correct. And then the next question obviously would be, what is our designed aircraft? And do we look at it from today, or what we want it to be, or what we think it would be?
It would be whatever your designed aircraft is at the time you apply for the grant. So right now, it would be for Gulfstream.
Just a thought, do you think it maybe makes sense to start putting some numbers to some of this stuff? Just so if you're looking for a separate grant outside of FAA AIP funding, or Chris, like you said, if you're looking to get some of these private jet owners or businesses or manufacturers.
We're shooting at, right?
So if they say, hey, you know, well, that sounds good, but are you asking me to contribute $1 million? You're asking me to contribute $15,000.
Right.
You know? And right. It kind of seems like we're
now, you said about the design aircraft being the G4. I guess I don't understand. 100%. We have a G5 on the field as well.
Correct. And this was something that we looked into right before we started the
master plan.
Your design aircraft is based on annual operations.
Okay.
So you need to trip a threshold of annual operations. That was like at least 500
hours. 500 hours.
500 hours.
So the G4 is flying more than the G5.
Correct.
An operation being one takeoff, one landing, whatever the most commanding aircraft is that does that and has at least 500 operations is your demand aircraft.
In regards to the equipment, whether it's the truck, the sprays, the tanks, or whatever that the FAA will fund, that's probably not so different whether it's for a Global Express or a G4. So if we were to get outside private grants, we can build this pad to accept G650s and Global Expresses. So I don't think that's a major issue in terms of getting the equipment.
So that's something we need to work on now. You also said something about it, you know, as far as the ramp reconstruction, you know, kind of looping it into that or
trying. Out loud. So the FAA will fund whatever the airport is eligible for. Where the airport's not eligible for the de-icing pad, that doesn't mean that during apron reconstruction, the airport couldn't purchase and install the infrastructure to support the pad. It just would have to be paid for in whole by the airport and not part of the construction project. And there's guidelines to documenting owner-furnished equipment for projects like that.
They allow sort of cap the economy of, hey, the contractor's doing all this work, so if you were to do this as a separate mobilization, the full rate price is X, but since you're doing it part of this project, it's reduced. They don't make you pay almost like a prevailing wage situation. They don't drive
no,
that.
See, if you don't use federal dollars, you can pay whatever any contractor quotes.
So he can say, hey, I'm here anyway.
Submitted, there's no federal compliance.
Right.
So you're paid for it as a private entity, and you will pay, I would guess, 60% of what it would cost to do it with federal dollars.
Some with tree clearing all the time. Mm.
So that's definitely something that I think, you know, we need to work on and get moving and do more research. Mm. Anybody else?
If we were able to get to our stealing in the middle of the night program of acquisition, acquiring other equipment, would that give us a leg up? You know, if somebody wants to give Matt a de-icing truck, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, we look every day for things like that. I've yet to see a de-icing truck on the list, but...
just have to have a spare one. So definitely, you know, let's get that moving, you know?
So sort of an action item thing, right? Obviously, we've talked about it for a long time. What is the next action item that needs to be sort of put down there? We kind of talked about some things, they're looking at this, looking at that, but what's the real, how do we keep the ball rolling? Obviously, it's not a project yet, but what's the...
Sounds like the cost estimate.
I would think that. I would think in terms of facility needs, when we start looking at where we want to place things, where the airport envisions certain infrastructure improvements to go, maybe we carve out where that pad would go.
Do you guys need to create a scope of work and a quote to submit to the the airport to say, here's our research project, and it's going to be acknowledged. I mean, is that, I mean, you know, obviously Nikki mentioned sort of the promoter stuff,
and
but
it does seem like to you know, knock on everyone's door and see what grant programs they have. So piecing together funding, it seems like a lot of work, which can't be rolled into an existing project. I know that the master plan may have some provisions for facility needs that may analyze the location and what's required, but...
Well, maybe we ought to approach it in that vein and do it piecemeal. If the FAA will pay for the equipment, let's go for the equipment. And if we have to build the pad, we'll borrow some money, or but at least we... If it's an A, B, C project, we got A anyway.
Right, we'll do C, then B will be C.
And that means, though, you know, we would want to, I think, move up the ramp reconstruction, right? Wouldn't we want to move that up to...
This is where it gets dynamic, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm looking at Nick's thing here, and one of the provisions is that pad needs to be shown on the ALP, and that fortunately dovetails perfectly with what we're doing with this master plan, because we will be doing an update to the airport's ALP. So it's just a matter of working with the MPC, Strategic Planning Committee, coming back to the authority, with iterations of alternatives showing where that de-icing pad is best situated, and then ultimately approving, you know, the ALP and sending that off, getting approved through the FAA. And then comes the equipment.
Yeah, I definitely think it needs to be something now in the consciousness of everything we do going forward.
If that's the priority, I mean, if that's priority number one, we should start looking at where the best place for that to go is and then start building things around that.
So, and that's something that, I mean, Gail would be more than happy to assist. But again, you know, we need some mechanism to pay for the time spent, above and beyond what's reasonably assumed.
So do we need to give you a scope of work, or would you come up with a proposed scope of work and we take a look at it?
I think I think Chris, you and I have spoken about it in a good enough length where if you'd like to sort of call a few places and maybe do some research on your own, that's fine. Again, Gail is more than willing to help. I know that my bosses would have my head if I started doing
free.
You don't work for free.
Yeah, we get it. That's what I'm saying. Is there a proposal you can give us and say, here's the scope of work, it's going to be X amount of dollars, and it's just a...
That's probably not a bad idea.
A funded project.
Put a scope together that says, if we were to pursue this, here would be step number one.
Here's the deliverables, and here's where we end up at, it would be this much.
But before I start asking for private grants, I need to know what the numbers are, like we said.
That would be one of the deliverables.
That's one of them.
That's exactly right. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So I think that's the next action item. So as soon as you guys can get that together, do you need a motion for that, or is that just an administrative thing?
Do you need a motion for that or not?
No.
Okay.
That's fine.
We can, you can tell Armin we're looking to get some money for you.
Okay. All right. Anything else with that, Joe?
So real quick, so just on the flip side of the strategic point of view, so this was sort of one of the big picture business attracting, you know, operational type aspects of the bigger plan. The flip side of it was, what can we do locally now? What can we do sort of on our own? What can we do to overall support we're the best thing going, and here we're going to show you how that is. One of the things we talked about was the improving of the Sharon Ave end of the airport. Did anybody reach out to you about signs? The signs came up. So we're talking about the sign thing again, the welcome sign, the hey, this is us, you know, the placards, the Pope, the something. All of our different tenants and our customers and our operators, signage, I'm thinking 2D barcodes you can shoot with your phone, big website addressy stuff, you know, stuff to clean up and a general cleanup of the area, right? It's a really sort of gross area, and it's right there.
And one of the things we're going to start with that we did discuss is we're going to remove the barbed wire from the fence at Sharon Ave, because it kind of makes it look like Keep Up, this is a prison. All across Sharon Ave, barbed wire on top of that fence.
And that's something we'll do on our own at no cost. You and Matt will go and Susan.
And anecdotally, too, another reason, not only just so it looks better.
Yeah.
And we can advertise ourselves. We can help our operators and our customers advertise themselves better.
It definitely needs to look better.
We also kind of, I think you, was it you were saying, what Joe or Matt was saying, that they're picking up drug paraphernalia out there weekly.
Right.
So it's a bit of a shoot-up location. We don't want to have that kind of thing going on.
Both fence lines on Pine Hill and Sharon Ave. Joe picks up half a dozen needles and spoons every week. So I've talked to the National Police Department, and they've increased patrols, and they're actually parking vehicles there at night rather than parking down in the church parking lot down the road. I've noticed the presence on Pine Hill, at least.
I was going to mention to you, I was driving by today, you know, over where Steve's spot is, where those trees are, and I saw a couple people kind of just hanging out in the woods there, and I was like, that's weird.
In the woods?
Well,
they're botanists, I'm sure.
Now, I know where the old bat baby
is. I mean,
yeah.
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 Oh,
right.
Let me say something about the signage. Just a reminder, but we originally got a couple of estimates, and one was $7,000, the other one was $12,000 for the sign. I mean, they were just totally out of the ballpark. We were going to do something in-house and have Matt and his crew, you know, install it, have the sign company make it, and bring down the cost, but it wasn't really very good. And the reason that we really stopped looking into that was because of the city's interest in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a beautification park, a playground, and then, you know, there were other things, and then there was a discussion, and I'm told that it's no longer a discussion, that the city might want to have it for a right turn from Sharon onto Pine Hill. And I still contend that Pine Hill Road is Amherst Street Junior, and it's going to get bigger. And there's going to be more traffic on that. And I would hate to think that we put time and effort and money into the beautification of that area by anybody, and also we put up signs or whatever, or put an aircraft there, which was one of the suggestions, and then have the city come knocking on the door and say, hey, we really want to take that corner and make it a mandatory right turn. I would think, if I was a city councilor, I would want to do that anyway.
Well, they said no. Couple of times.
I don't know that they've officially said no, and I think we ought to nail them down to that.
Well, yeah, one of the primary area I was thinking about was the pull-in area, you know, the not dirt, even though it looks like dirt, the paved areas, sort of from the car wash to the berm.
Yeah.
Kind of
not
quite to the, when the fence makes that 45 degree jog.
Yeah.
That area right there. Just because.
Well, you know, the last conversation I had with the chair of the beautification committee, a lady, I can't remember her name. On that particular piece of property, she said to me, would you mind if we put flower boxes along the fence? I said, no.
Couldn't barely show that.
And that doesn't
barely
show
that.
But there's not been anything out there at all, and no improvement whatsoever on that area of the road. So I don't know if they just, this is going to be the garden club or somebody else.
And I just said, a quick point of concern. The airport used AIP funds to take those two properties, so giving that property to the city may be a violation of the grant insurance that's associated with those.
So it is our property, and we use the money, the FAA money.
Correct.
So, and that's why we talked about not being able to put a little park or
kindergarten in there.
So I think
that would be an eminent domain, though.
Well,
not without paying the FAA back for
fair market value.
But there's another aspect of this too, and there were discussions about, you know, putting a military aircraft out there, a massive sign that says, you know, welcome to National Airport. And we have to take into consideration the sensitivity of the neighborhood. That, you know, everybody there that lives out there knows there's an airport there. They don't need to be told that it is. Yes, we do need to have more directional signs along our fence or whatever, showing people where the airport is, where the airport entrance is. But I don't think we need to put this in the face of the people that live across the street. And,
I'm sure they prefer it over the rundown area now.
Well,
Well, I understand you would be a good neighbor.
Yeah.
I'm not saying turn it into a NASCAR track, but when the C-130 guys were out here doing their leaf runs earlier in the summer, that, I mean, again, everybody knows I grew up down there. I made a beeline for Sharon Ave. You couldn't get down Sharon Ave because every single conceivable area was filled with a car and people in the back of the trucks, and then because they saw these airplanes and they all flocked to that area.
But not necessarily the neighborhood.
Right. Now, you know, I don't know if the Precision Metal Shop across the street cares, you know, the Budway people. I don't think, you know, the dance studio, the driving school or whatever over there. I'm sure the car wash or Johnny's doesn't really care. And again, not really saying, you know, we need to plaster the whole area. I know there's issues even in the wintertime when you get the winds going through there. You don't want to plaster the fence line, right?
Yeah, well, that's another issue.
It turns into a sail.
Yeah, we need that.
But you know, just a general, I'm just envisioning something in terms of, hey, this is the airport. This is what's here. Learn to fly. You know, the basic sort of perfunctory. That's not, you know. I'm sure there's people that think Southwest Airlines flies in the NASCAR or something. You know, it's just that we don't have a good. I put it in my document that I circulated with the strategic planning folks, that we need to ingrain ourselves in the conscience of the community, and we haven't done that. I don't think.
Well, we could decorate the Sharon Ave fence with canvas signs with the holes in them that will allow the wind to go through it. And they could be a multitude of signs that we strap up for 3 weeks and bring it down, like we did for the movie night, and also for the truck, Wings and Wheels night.
All right. Well, let's work on that. Any other?
No, that was it. Just
there. Okay. Bob, good with that? Good with the same thing? Okay. Old business. Chris, you want to building 106 lease extension, I think we should table and take it off the agenda until more info is gathered.
Do you want me to speak a little bit about it?
What did you say?
Do you want me to speak a little bit about
Sure.
why we're doing
Yes.
this? The property is owned by SAP Samuel Tamposi. And I had a phone conversation with him the other day, and he's doing research with some folks up at Ease because they're having a similar battle trying to extend their leases beyond what the FAA describes as, you know, reasonable. They're looking for like 100-year leases, 99-year leases, and the FAA says anything over 50 years is considered disposing of the property. So they're working on that, and he said this could take months, but he wants to work with those people, and the governor is actually involved in this. And he said, so, you know, he's going to do his research and get back to us. He said this could take 6-9 months, so it's basically being put on the back burner. No urgency on our part to take any action.
Okay. So for the time being, you need to make a motion to table that.
Is that Building 106
or is that Building
106?
Okay, so that
was
Building 106.
And with respect to, and Chris and I researched this before we had the meeting with Tamposi. And basically, we as a board are in a position where we probably cannot entertain the kind of extensions that the folks in this particular case are looking for in order to make their property more attractive to sell. And we discussed this with the city attorney, and basically, even though the options that currently exist in existing leases go beyond the guidance that we've received from the FAA, we have to oblige by our contract. And that was part of the discussion that Chris had with Tim Post. Based on that scenario, Chris and I are going to approach the folks on the perimeter place who are also extending, requesting an extension of their lease beyond allowed by the FAA. And so we're going to fall back to the default position, which is we can offer you, we are willing to go ahead and extend your lease consistent with what options exist in your contract, which I think in the place of something like 24 years. I think they go out to 2027 and they want an option to go further. We can give people all the options we want to give them with the caveat that the rates and everything are all subject to negotiation at that time. So, to answer your question, the building model 6 can come off, and the permanent place we'll have the conversation soon, and we believe that both of these will be resolved before the next meeting.
Okay, so do we need a motion to take it off?
I don't think so.
Just take it off. Yeah. Okay. All right. No new business. Upcoming events. Chris, you already talked about that. Any other? I do want to talk about the project list, the action project list. So we already. The first project was communication with the mayor on NAA board member replacement nominations, and it was already voted on by the Board of Aldermen and the mayor. And I am staying for one more year, and Farrell is renewed for a 5-year term.
Right, and that has not, you haven't taken your new oath, or that has Farrell taken his new oath?
This morning? I think that we met with Aldermen. Did we talk about this yesterday and how that we went through? One committee now has to go through another committee and then back to the board.
Okay,
so there's still a process.
Okay. Chris, do you want to talk about any of these? The disposition of the property, or you want to just move on?
We're going to discuss that again next week at another meeting.
All right. How about expanding the board from 5 to 7 members? You're still working on
that? Again, that's 2018. We can't go in before January. Mm-hmm. And just for everybody's education, I recommend that we increase the board from 5 to 7 because of potential problems like we were experiencing right now with 2 members leaving. If that's resolved for the next 5 years, I think we can take that off. But we can't go in before January.
We don't want to torture anyone else.
No.
Okay. All right, any other public input?
And by the way, that requires action at State House.
Okay. Steve.
I apologize for being late. Did I miss out that those 2 guys are heading out?
No. Her term is up. She's taking a 1-year extension.
No, that part I understood, but it almost sounded like you said Rosenblum and Farrell.
Farrell was appointed for 1 year to fill an existing term. So his term is up as of August of this year.
So technically, 2 people expiring at the same time.
Right.
Somehow that.
And with that reinstatement, the way we just explained it, right, we will then have 1 director expiring every year for the next 5 years.
And I'll be first. So, any public input besides that? All right. Okay. Director comments.
I believe you adequately talked about 124 because I just wanted to ask, snow plowing season is approaching. Are we going to run any ads in the paper, or do you have enough people?
Well, Matt and I had a discussion, Irby and I had a discussion just this morning, actually, and I told him that sometime in the next 2 weeks I want to get a meeting together with his current crew. And the only questionable person in question, there's 1 person that may not be coming back, but other than that, he still has Bob DeMeo, Bob Donadio, Joe himself, myself. So we're going to go from there.
Okay. Director Duquette?
I'm good, thank you.
You're good?
I'm good.
No, I
yield my time.
Okay, for the next hour.
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
Young Eagles, we usually do it twice a year, June and October. It's usually the first Saturday of the month. However, it's good when we all talk about it and know what's going on. It was kind of thrown up somewhere. Nobody really knew about it. It's been taken down, and it will not be happening in October, right?
It's canceled.
Canceled for October.
The plantation has been too busy with this new project.
Right. And so, in the future, we should all just make sure that we know what's going on with that. There was a water main break, and Chris was really great. I was at the restaurant, and it was Chris's day off, and I called him, and he was right on it. It was so nice, as a business owner, to have Chris, taking the bull by the horns and just calling and finding out what was going on, what was happening. So I really appreciate that. It was nice that I didn't have to do all that chasing myself as a business owner on the airport. So thanks for that. And I guess that's all. Nobody's dying, right? So, this time I would entertain.
I'm not really sure what we need to do.
We do. So, I will make a motion to adjourn public session and go into non public to discuss real estate. And we need a roll call vote for that.
Secretary Shoker.
Yes.
Vice Chairman Sandra Cushing.
Yes.
Director Joe Duquette.
Yes.
Okay. We'll adjourn to we'll have a 2 minute recess.
No, that's your job. I can't handle that. It's your job. You guys get paid for it. You don't make something. You pay
for it.
In accordance with RSA 92A, paragraph 3, what I do is I think about the problem.
Yeah.
And what are we doing?